Get your daily market recap on the latest stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Neil, you've looked at the same economic data. Your thoughts on what you're seeing on the Bloomberg?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons why inventories fell in October for at the retail level is because we had an absolute blowout in retail sales. So think about what the inventory to sales ratio is looking like in the retail sector. I'm guessing lower. So I guess, you know, one of the ways that a recession works is through some element of surprise. Companies think that things will be okay, then something bad happens. They have to clear out inventories and they're hiring and adjust their CapEx plans and so forth. But what if the process works in reverse? What if we've been talking about recession, what, since June of this year? And companies have been adjusting to some extent. I mean, inventories have been being pared back. CapEx has been slowing somewhat. And what if they're surprised the other way now? What if growth is accelerating and the recession they anticipated didn't happen?
So let's get our teeth into 23. What we're really discussing here is what is wrong about a consensus. Deutsche Bank came out a little bit earlier this morning. I'll share this quote with everyone who might have missed it a little bit earlier. It's worth remembering that exactly a year ago, markets were pricing a Fed funds rate of 0.68% by the end of 22. Economists had CPI at 2.6%. Given the huge forecasting miss over the last 12 months, it's remarkable how settled the consensus is around a terminal rate of 5%. Their question, I think, is your question. Should we be questioning 5% a whole lot more?
Yeah, I think the risks are skewed to the upside. I mean, when Chair Powell tells you that he doesn't know what the path for rates will be, he just knows that it'll be enough. I think you have to take that as a signal that they're willing to do more rather than less. And if real economic growth is accelerating, which I believe it is at the moment, then that puts pressure on resource capacity. And that in turn puts upward pressure on prices. So a lot of the things that people are talking about, you know, with respect to some of these bullwhip effects, you know, in household durable goods, that could prove transitory. So, you know, I hate to use that word, but that's sort of where I come down on this. I mean, ultimately, you know, people look at what's going on with car prices and prices for household durables. They're coming down. Okay, rents are coming down. But if aggregate incomes are still growing at a healthy pace, all that's doing is freeing up people to go spend money somewhere else. And, you know, if savings doesn't really go up, then that's going to drive up the prices for the goods and services that they start to spend their money on.
If you're bullish on the economy, does that mean you're bullish for risk assets for next year?
No, I don't think so. I think that we're probably in for a period of below trend returns in the equity markets.
So parse that out to this idea that we're going to see better than expected growth in your estimation, that you're seeing ongoing resilience, that's bad news.
Well, I don't want to fight the Fed, right? I mean, you know, it's very amusing that so many of the people that, you know, following the financial crisis, oh, the Fed is just driving up stocks and, you know, it's the balance sheet. Well, like now, if you don't want to fight the Fed, that means you should be cautious on stocks.
I look, Neil, at the math here in the second look GDP, and let's call it, and this is completely amateur, folks. We had a real GDP 2.9%, a price index of 4.whatever%, and we come out to some form of nominal spirit of 7.2%. We finally got a risk-free rate where, you know, money actually is not free anymore. Do we adapt? How do we adjust to going back to what we knew decades ago, with a substantial nominal GDP? Money now actually costs something, and I don't sense any gloom from you. We'll be fine, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think my view is that if you're thinking about the next 2-3 years, we will probably have we need a period, I think, of below trend growth to wring the inflation out of the system, right? So even though we may be accelerating—
Under 3% real GDP?
Yeah, most likely.
I mean, Feroli over at JP Morgan, John, is like even lower than that as a run rate.
I'm looking at 0.4 for 23 on the Bloomberg.
But the question is, I mean, forecasting out 12, 18 months is difficult. Agreed. What I have more confidence in is what's happening right now. And right now, you know, even if you believe that we see some below trend growth for a longer period of time, right now things are looking a little bit better. And so I think that's really the tension.
When they start talking about long and variable lags, what do you hear when you see that in a statement? Because we had a story of two parts around the last Fed decision. You
sure.
had the statement, then you had the news conference. Can you walk us through how you interpreted the statement in that line, which many people attribute to the vice chair?
I think the doves made a great trade. I mean, if you're sitting around the FOMC table and you're Lael Brainard, you got them to codify that into the statement in exchange for them to say something about neutral interest rates and, you know, sound puffing their chest at the press conference. But that's all later. That's like 5-6 months from now. Lots of things can change. The data can go their way, the dove's way. So you're trading the certainty of stepping down to 50 basis points now in exchange for the uncertainty around what neutral rates may be. And so in my view, even though, that was a down day for markets and financial conditions tightened, so the hawks looked like they may have won, I think actually the doves played their hand pretty well. And I think that's part of the problem.
Well,
that it's too soon for the doves to be winning any of these debates.
This is the reason why there are so many people who still believe that the Fed's going to not raise rates to the point that you're saying, that perhaps 5% will be the ceiling, and that they could even start cutting rates next year. What gives you confidence that the doves aren't going to win another trade, that they aren't going to make something else that really complicates the message when you say don't fight the Fed? It's not clear what that means.
I think the data will make it, to me, the data will not make it tenable for them to make their case for cuts, because the unemployment rate would not have gone up enough in order to justify that outcome. And, you know, look at what's already happening. I mean, interest rates down. Oh, look what's happening. Purchase applications going up for mortgage demand is rising. The dollar's going down. Have you looked at the performance of industrial stocks lately? Global growth may well be picking up next year. What do you think?
The Caterpillar was stunning.
What do you think that's going to mean for U.S. manufactured exports? So what if companies are done with the inventory adjustment?
So do you not share the housing gloom that's out there? It's tangible.
No, I mean, look, the housing market is the one area where the Fed's policies has gotten a lot of traction. But now interest rates have come down a little bit, and that's unlocking some activity. And up is ultimately up. I mean, this is one of these arguments. Oh, look at new home sales. It's all about cancellations. I mean, give me a break. I mean, up is up. The fact that people are signing.
There we go. That's the data we know.
New home sales.
Up is up.
New home sales are booked when a contract is signed. Are people not knowing what the interest rate is
you
when they sign that
the
contract?
Right now.
The fact that they're signing the contract, knowing what the rates are, is a sign of confidence in and of itself. If you look at the last conference board survey, or the last couple conference board surveys, people see rates to be somewhat lower in the year ahead. And what happens? Buying conditions for homes go up. So I think if the Fed pauses, rates come in. I mean, yeah, residential investment's not going to be as much of a drag in Q2 of next year as it is at this very moment.
Call of the month. We haven't mentioned it. Neil Dutta comes on the program. Do you know what he says, Tom? He says, long sterling. I'm bullish sterling and Rishi.
103-ish?
Cable. Now back up to 120. Got any more FX calls for us?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Neil Dutta of Renaissance Macro.
Do you
Fantastic.
Have a sweater to go with your tie? For those of you on
very
radio,
festive.
We're looking for the Christmas sweater.
Can we clear this up? Can we zoom in? Because I'm getting people writing in now.
They look like goats.
People are agreeing with Lisa and saying it's
they look
goats,
like goats
and not reindeer.
These are deer with
they've got antlers.
Reeds around them.
Yeah.
They look
so like
festive.
Nice big ears. It's like Bambi.
Have we settled that now?
He says they're reindeer.
Do you have a sweater to go with this? Can we get you on before Christmas with this?
Sure. I'll be happy to put on my Mr. Rogers look for you.
Very good.
Are we going to do Christmas sweaters? Are we doing that?
Please do.
No.
I think that you should, with like a little bow tie around them.
I would do that for you.
I think, really?
Yeah, of course.
Aww.
I'm very
like
festive.
Little like pom-poms and little
I'm
things like that.
I'm a very joyful guy. around.
Do you know who owns the high ground in
I like
this?
That why like
you
laugh?
Do you know who owns the high ground?
I'm a very joyful man.
Who does?
Ira Jersey owns the high ground.
I didn't know that, does he?
Sweater territory.
Yeah. I thought he collected football scarves.
He's got the same thing. It's a scarf-sweater combo.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Mona Mahajan joins us now, senior investment strategist at Edward Jones. Mona, I have to say, reading through your work, you sound a little bit more constructive going into 2023. Where does that constructive view come from?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Look, you know, I think we have a journey to get to that constructive view, but I certainly the Fed is still on this path to raise rates. They've made it clear they are not done. And in fact, we're probably heading towards that 5% level early in 2023. And of course, the focus is shifting somewhat in markets from this inflationary ongoing upward pressure to perhaps some stabilization, but then of course, a shift towards what happens to the economic growth picture, which we think does soften, especially in that first half of 2023. But perhaps a silver lining and that more constructive view comes from the fact that we are perhaps set up then, the stage is then set for a potential recovery from a market perspective. And keep in mind, the market cycle and economic cycle are two different animals. And
thank
in fact,
you.
Markets can head towards a low, make a low, but then rebound even as we are in perhaps right. a downturn or recession. And so I think that's where the constructive view comes from. And of course, the hope and the leading indicators of inflation that are showing that stability ahead.
Mona, in the next year, would you explain surveillance 101, that the world doesn't end if we get a 5% terminal rate? We've been there before. Why are we so angst-ridden this time?
Yeah, a great point. And in fact, if you look at, you know, a 30-year history, a 5% Fed funds rate is not out of the norm. And a treasury yield certainly at 3.5% to 4% is not out of the norm. What we will say is unique this time around versus the last 10 years, perhaps the period after the great financial crisis. That's when the Fed was perhaps closer to the zero bound, treasury yields closer to 2%. That whole period was really marked by a growth outperformance, growth versus value. This period ahead is unique in the fact that we probably won't head back to the zero bound. You know, the Fed can go from about a 5% rate over time, perhaps back to a more neutral rate, 2.5% range, let's say. But yields, treasury yields in that environment may also remain in that 2 to 3, 3.5% range. And so what's different, I think, is that you do have an alternative to equities in play, probably a better mix between bonds and stocks in your portfolio, but also that environment where growth outperformed for perhaps close to a decade. It may be look a little different in the next decade ahead in that because yields are higher, we could get a better balance between growth and value as well.
What if Evan Brown of UBS is right and we avoid a recession next year? And that ends up being really negative in terms of creating higher rates for longer that bleeds into an over-indebted society, which a lot of people say is the case. How does that factor into your outlook?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We don't necessarily think the path to a soft landing is completely closed either, but we do think it's getting narrower. And a lot of the leading indicators that we watch, including the curve, but also things like the PMIs and ISM indicators, are pointing towards, if not recession, at least a softening below trend. So we do think that is in the cards. But if we do avoid that recessionary path and hit the soft landing, we do think actually markets will respond favorably to that to some extent. You know, I think the jobs picture will be in decent condition. We'll have a consumer in healthy shape. And in fact, you could get through this period. We think the inflationary pressures were largely supply side driven, and the demand picture will soften. And so we think inflation could come in as well. And so we don't think it's necessarily this dire scenario to avoid a recession here in the US. But keep in mind, recessionary cycles are part of the business cycle. And so we do think at some point the excesses that have accumulated over the past, you know, 2 to 3 years, that will, you know, play itself out in some to some extent. And perhaps we won't see a broader recession, but we could see what we're calling that rolling recession in certain sectors. And perhaps we're starting to see that in the tech sector, which was probably where a lot of the excesses happened during that pandemic period. But I think to your broader point, you know, with debt increasing and yields moving higher and perhaps staying higher, we will see a little bit of a clearing impact on the credit side as well, but probably a good thing for investors who are looking for value.
So, Manuel, I just want to squeeze this in 20 seconds. Can you be super specific where you think the leadership is going to come from?
Yeah, we think heading into the year, we could still see this defensive value play have a little bit of legs because we are entering a period of potential downward momentum in the economy. But as we reemerge from that, we think the recovery playbook is back in play. Areas, you know, parts of quality growth will probably take some leadership, but cyclicals and maybe even that small cap sector will return as well. So think about more balance in your portfolio heading into 2023.
Mona, thank you. As always,
she's
wonderful.
She's too optimistic for
Mona Mahajan of Edward James, the constructive view. That was the constructive view on 23.
I'm not doing crystal ball. I'm looking at the present, which is what Wei Li is doing. She's Global Chief Investment Strategist at BlackRock. Helped us out in London when we were there a number of weeks ago, and we're thrilled you joined us in New York this morning. I'm going to cut to the chase. What's changed here, not the crystal ball that John mentions, but what changed is that we have a risk-free rate. We have cash as values. We're getting on our iPhones. You two can make 3.2%. You know, it's like from another time and place. Now that the risk-free rate is back, we have almost a real money environment. What does that mean for asset allocation?
Well, as we enter this new regime, in fact, we're already in this new regime where it departs from the great moderation, and now we're in a world shaped by supply. In our view, it needs to it requires a rethink of asset allocation. You talked about risk-free rate. In fact, we think that the new regime requires a new playbook altogether. So we talked about forecast for next year. We believe that even as we enter a recession, which is our expectation for next year, inflation could surprise on the upside. It's going to be lower than what we have seen so far this year, but it could surprise on the upside because we believe central banks are not going to go all the way to fight inflation to bring it down to target. And at the same time, you talked about consensus. Right now, we're risk off. We're not that constructive on risk sentiment.
You're underweight equities, aren't you?
We're underweight equities. We remain underweight equities at this juncture. But I think what is more important is when we would become more constructive. And we expect to be more constructive at some point in 2023. And having that mechanism of gauging when to turn positive is important. Sizing the damage of the macro scarring as a result of central banks over tightening, and also understanding to what extent that damage is in the price is going to be critical as we think about when to turn positive. And also importantly, as we turn positive, it's not going to be the prelude of a decades-long bull market that we have seen in the past. We believe that it's going to be a lot more volatile, a lot more choppy. And again, here, sizing the damage, understanding what's in the price is going to become
what's very shaping your view about that shift in the market regime? What drives you towards making that conclusion?
It's very much around our conviction that we're in a world shaped by multiple factors of supply constraint. Yes, of course, energy price is coming down a little bit and some of the supply bottlenecks is getting alleviated. But looking beyond that, we're still facing three structural catalysts for elevated inflations in the long term. So aging demographics, you know, over the last 15 years in the US, actually participation rate rate went from 68% to 62%. That is wholly explainable by aging demographics. And also we have geopolitical fragmentation that represents further supply constraint, reshoring, friendshoring, as well as the net zero transition, where we believe that there will be a mismatch between demand and supply. Just like during the pandemic, there was a mismatch between demand and supply, and that pushed up inflation. So we see this persisting, which is why even as inflation goes down, as we look at next year, we believe that it's going to settle higher versus the pre-pandemic levels.
Given that, how much conviction can you have going into long duration?
Currently, we actually want to push back against this notion that as we enter a recession, you just automatically hide in long duration bonds, because this recession is going to be caused by central banks over tightening versus previous recessions where central banks are expected to come to the rescue and cut rate. We actually don't believe that developed market central banks, in particular the Fed, is able to cut rates next year. Markets are pricing rate cuts, a pretty aggressive rate cut cycle. But in the face of this persistent inflation and supply constraint that I just talked about, we believe that they're going to hike and stay at those levels for an extended period of time.
This is an important day for China. One of your leaders has died, and I want to go back. Before you were at the University of Cambridge, you did something no one we've ever talked to did, which is you did the Mathematical Olympiad in your China, not once but twice, which is, folks, trust me, unheard of. How do you perceive the leadership change that we see? I don't want you to get in trouble with BlackRock, but the new China or the next China, what does it look like to you on this day where Jing dies?
I think one big takeaway from the party Congress earlier in the quarter is that focus is broadening out from growth to social coherence, common prosperity, national security. And what that means over the longer term is that we should expect a lower trend growth for China. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of the transmission mechanism from macro to micro will become less efficient. So all of that warrants a higher risk premium as you think about incorporating China in a whole portfolio context, which is why tactically we're neutral China assets, even as the country opens up. But strategically, we're actually underweight China government bonds because of the yield attractiveness becoming less.
Oh, Wei Li, this was brilliant. I'm going to take the opportunity to promote some of the research over at BlackRock, Tom, because I think a lot of people outside of Wall Street may find it difficult.
Yeah, they're underfollowed. They're underknown.
Certain research. No, to be clear here, Tom, the Investment Institute weekly note is available online on a website. For everyone.
And it's terrific.
And it's a great read. I always enjoy it. Wei Li, fantastic, from BlackRock.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Let's do this, folks. Let's go to someone that can piece together your November and try to stagger into 2023. They do that at Deutsche Bank, led by David Folkerts-Landau, and he has as his chief international strategist, Alan Ruskin, who has been such a supporter of the show through this crazy year. Alan, I want to go a little bit technical right now. The Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index, which I think the great Michael Rosenberg told me is 11 ratios. The fact is, over November, it has become more accommodative. On a standard deal, deviation basis, we've moved from the gloom of a negative one standard deviation almost back to negative 0.50 standard deviation. We are more accommodative. How does that change Chairman Powell's speech today and the Fed meeting forward?
Yeah, Tom, I think it's a great question, really, because I think on the one hand, Chairman Powell will just look to what the Fed Fund futures are pricing in, and it's looking for a peak in Fed Funds of around 5%. I think that would seem pretty reasonable to him. Then you look at really what's happened since the last FOMC meeting, and you know, as you remark, every component, every major component of the Financial Conditions Index has eased substantially. Obviously, the bond market particularly, I think, has been driving things. Some of this is very much related to CPI. But you've also got tangential markets, things like the oil price, which has come down very sharply. I think around the FOMC, it was tracking around $90 a barrel. And then WTI, it's now $80 a barrel. It's just everything is pointing in a more constructive way. I don't think that's a terrible thing from his standpoint. I think it's what, something you'd want to monitor.
Right.
But I think it takes away, to some extent, the fears of a particularly sharp slowdown in growth.
I thought Draghi was so good on this at the ECB, the economist from MIT, and Alan, you are as well. In your research note, you spend a lot of time on the when. The way we frame this, folks, our listeners and viewers, is the x-axis. Think about that chart you made in school. Alan Ruskin, what matters on the x-axis right now as you go out into next year and indeed into 2024? Where is the when that you're focused on?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people ask questions on the when related to when will we have a recession. And the main recession indicator that people have been looking at, of course, we all focused on, is the yield curve. And that's suggestive of a recession. And normally it leads by roughly about 18 months to 2 years, so a long lead time. And that would suggest pretty much the second half of 2023 is the when on that particular question.
Yeah.
When you look at other leading indicators, of course, you're seeing something which is on a path towards a recession, but it is not saying a recession's baked in the cake. The one point of, that I would say, Tom, that I'd emphasize is we are all looking at the same thing, and the yield curve could give some misleading signals given the supply side shock, and it's a favorable supply side shock that we're currently under at the moment.
Right.
That could certainly lead to more flattening of the yield curve than you would otherwise think. And I don't think it's quite as recessionary or as strong a recession signal as it would otherwise be.
Lisa, can we have a victory lap for Matthew Lozzetti, a colleague of Mr. Ruskin? He nailed the recession call, but also the when of it in hindsight, out farther. Remember, we were giving him grief because he was talking end of 2023, whatever. I mean, Lozzetti nailed it so far.
And a lot of people are on board with that. The question that I'm wondering, though, exactly to your point, Alan, is the supply side issues, which we really don't understand in terms of whether they come back online, whether you get those production delays that are eradicated, especially with COVID zero. What's your base case in terms of supply chain disruptions and lack of supplies and whether that eases enough next year to really reduce some of the inflationary pressure?
I think it's eased enormously, really. I think if you look at supply deliveries in particular, in most indicators, they've actually normalized or pretty much got back into the range that we saw pre-COVID. When you look at PMI prices paid, those numbers are typically also within the zone of what we saw pre-COVID as well. So I think there's reasons for optimism on the supply side. I think like everybody, the biggest concern is that inflation's been around for long enough that has become entrenched in the labor market. And, you know, that's, I think, where the residual inflation pressures still reside. And that's really, you know, which is going to, it's really going to create angst amongst the Fed, you know, if we see employment cost index not come down, other wage indicators like hourly earnings not come down.
Which is the reason why a lot of people are watching JOLTS today and on Friday, the jobs report. People are also watching the housing market reports to get some sort of sense with respect to your core, which is FX, or where you started. And I'm wondering, Vasilios Giannakis yesterday of Citi saying that the housing market may be the biggest distinguishing feature between the winners and the losers internationally. The ones that have the worst housing markets might end up suffering the biggest weakening in their currencies. Do you buy that? Do you see that as a correct roadmap?
I think it is an important roadmap, and in most cycles, it tends to be dominant. I would say here in the U.S., at least, the concerns on housing are probably a little exaggerated. Housing starts is one of the best indicators, permits one of the best indicators, but I think you can have house price deflation come off quite substantially without it being too problematic for consumption, in part because house inflation was so strong to begin with. I think on an international side, the countries I would worry about most, and my colleagues in London have pointed this out, is Sweden and Canada. Those are the countries where the debt to relative to disposable income is most problematic. The financing issues are most problematic. So I think you have to watch Canada, the Canadian dollar, and the stocky, really. Those are the vulnerable currencies.
Alan, I gotta go out buying a Christmas tree to keep up with the Farrow family. I mean, Farrow had his tree up way before Thanksgiving. I'm going out today on demand of Afterthought, and I need to make an FX trade here. Dollar up 14%. Percent off the bottom. Can you stay resilient, strong dollar this year? And what's the best way to play it?
Yeah, look, I think the dollar has almost certainly peaked. You don't get these sizable moves without usually some sort of follow through. But I think we're going to have a bit of a bumpy year, as it were, because, you know, the Fed is obviously still tightening. We've still got to get to at least a 5% funds rate. If there are risks in terms of the funds rate, it's probably still to the top side rather than to the downside. So, you know, that's going to sort of bolster the dollar's case. I think over time, we're just building effectively a base on Eurodollar, between parity and say 105 for an eventual assault on sort of 110, later in the year.
Alan, wonderful to hear from you, sir.
2023, that is, yeah.
Alan Ruskin at Deutsche Bank. Alan, thank you.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.